The meeting is declared open. We'll then move to item number two. And did we receive any apologies? Are there any apologies?
We've got one apology from the Honorable Shoko Sitoli, who's got an injury.
Okay. But also Darren?
Yeah, and the committee secretary Darren is not well, and the researcher Musa is on the leave.
And then the researcher, Mr. Lomo, will be joining the meeting late. He is consulting this morning, and then he'll be joining us late. Thank you very much. Honourable members, here are the apologies. Do you accept the apologies? Apologies accepted. Thank you very much. Without any waste of time, we will then request National Treasury to brief us. I have been informed that the delegation is led by Dr. Modise. Where is Dr. Modise? I thought Dr. Modise was still coming. I'm joking. So that's fine. Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks, Doctor. Please lead us. Please assist Shamila. Can you assist? Can you assist Shamila?
Yeah, can I just looks like stuck.
Is it?
Oh, okay.
Okay, there we go. Yes, it's working. As I said, thank you, Chair. We have circulated the full report a few weeks ago, but we also prepared a very detailed presentation. I will go through the highlights of the third quarter outcomes, and if the committee wishes, we can go through the details. But all in all, we'll just be looking at the overall spending patterns for the third quarter. We have highlighted to the committee key issues that they should be aware of, and also did a detailed presentation per group of the department so that the committee can have more information. That's okay. So all in all, for the third quarter, there were adjustments that were made in the medium-term budget policy statement, and the biggest adjustment was the increase of 14.5 billion from the main appropriation, which was in February 2017, and this was mainly because, as the committee would know, we had an increase in the spending of the National Treasury of 9.8 billion. I will explain the details in the following slides. For telecommunications and postal services, there was an increase of the 3.6 billion. Home affairs and water affairs received 1.2 billion and 0.5 billion respectively. But there were other departments where there were reductions in their budget of the same period, and those were basically basic education, social development, police, as well as DECO. So there was minor adjustments in their budget. Just looking at the third quarter itself, so this will be the accumulated spending. So it's quarter one plus quarter two plus quarter three. The overall spending was 578.4 billion against an estimate of 572 billion, and this basically was an overspending of 6.3, mainly driven by the allocations to the departments on top that I've mentioned. I will get to the percentages, but basically the it's an overspending of about 1%. So basically, the categories, if you're looking at them in terms of economic classifications, the big changes were on the payment for financial assets, and this was due to the increase or the payment by the National Treasury to the South African Airways, as well as allocations to the New Development Bank. So in terms of economic classification, the financial assets received a lot of money. Spending on goods and services, however, was below projections by 2.9 billion, and mainly due to a lot of savings that came through from that category. We have compensation of employees, which was marginally lower than expected by just above half a billion. And this is mainly because most of the departments were not filling up the positions, and they were looking after or out of the compensation ceilings that they have. So as a result, we saw a number of departments who had savings in terms of the compensation of employees. And basically for the spending on capital assets, we were below expectations by 1.2 billion, and this was due to lower spending in the basic education sector as well as police and justice. Now, if we look at the departments that resulted or showed the largest underspending year to date for the three consecutive quarters of 2017-18, the first one would have been corporate government and traditional affairs, and the reason why they showed such underspending was because they withheld a portion of the municipal infrastructure grant to municipalities that are not compliant with the DORA provision. So if a municipality does not comply, then the department usually holds the fund and they don't transfer the funds. So it's not necessarily a bad underspending. They're just trying to make sure that they only give it to municipalities who are compliant, which is a good thing. You have higher education and training, where the delays in the payments for infrastructure grants in Program 3 were as a result, or they resulted in underspending. Correctional services, on the other hand, it showed underspending, and this was because of non-payment of operational leases invoices from the Department of Public Works. Although this has been a problem for the department in the first half of the year, they managed to resolve it in the third quarter, and we don't think that there's going to be a large underspending for the rest of the year because they managed to deal with this. You have human settlements, where there was a lot of misalignment in the spending projections and the grant payments for the settlement grant and the urban settlement development grant. So that caused a bit of underspending. Trade and industry, also non-compliance, has resulted in underspending. For justice and constitutional development, it was mainly because they are taking time to fill up the positions, as well as the non-payment of invoices for accommodations charges due to lack of supporting documents. But this one, justice and constitutional development, as well as correctional services, they managed to deal with the matter and resolve the matter, so we don't expect to see a lot of underspending from these departments for the rest of the year. There were other departments that showed a large underspending, and the first one was the National Treasury, because of the transfers to SAA for them to settle their debt obligations to Standard Chartered Bank, and also the allocations for the New Development Bank. As I said earlier, the overspending in Treasury was close to 10 billion because of these transactions. For transport, there was transfers to SANRAL and the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, which were made much earlier than scheduled. That will show an overspending. But because they're still within the year, at the end of the year, we don't think there will be overspending for transport. You have telecommunications and postal services, where Treasury transferred 3.6 billion for the post office. That would have come up in the third quarter because we did it just before medium-term budget policy statement. As I said, home affairs, water, rural development, environmental, small business, and tourism, they also had some overspending, but the biggest one would have been National Treasury, Transport, and Telecommunications. Just looking at the personnel spending, because one of the issues we tend to face is that large departments find it very difficult to remain within the ceiling, because to move the people in the public sector, it becomes slightly difficult. And if you have a big number of people working there, to remain within the ceiling becomes a bit difficult. So there were departments that continued to overspend in their personnel budgets, and these ones were Home Affairs, where they are overspending by 342 million, and this is mainly because of the payments of the cost of living increases to employees in December. You have Defense and Military Veterans, where they overspend by 120 million, and this was mainly due to overtime payments for medical doctors in the military health services. But there were some departments likely who underspend, and all in all, that's why the net effect of the personnel budget seems so small, because other departments overspent and others underspent. And the ones that underspent was mainly correctional services, which has been underspending by 147 million in the third quarter. If you're just looking at the numbers of the people who are in the establishment vis-a-vis the human resources plan that they have, the biggest departments that we are still worried about will be Defense and Military Veterans, where they are 5,174 employees above their target. And they have been reducing their staff complement, but it hasn't been as fast as we would have expected it to be, and as a result, they remain to have the highest number above the target. Then you have departments such as higher education and training, where there are 10,358 employees below their target. And this is mainly because of the part-time and contract lecturers at TVET colleges and CET colleges. They have been trying to fill up their positions, but because of the administrative issues of filling up so many posts, they're taking longer than they expected. We have been speaking to the department to try and understand what plans do they have to ensure that they fast-track the process of filling up the positions. But these, as I said, mostly is because of the part-time and the contract lectures. If you look at the DPSA circular, most of over 40 pages would be for the Department of Higher Education. So imagine if you have so many vacant positions, it becomes difficult as a department to manage this. But that is one department where they still have a lot of positions to fill up. And then there are other departments who, looking at from the 1st of April until now, they managed to reduce their headcount quite significantly. And the first one will be police, but they managed to reduce by over 4,000, followed by defense and other ones. Public Works managed to reduce their employees by 368, while agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, it's about 314. Now, what we decided to do in this case, Chair, was we thought it would be important that we highlight per function group the issues that we want the committee to note and the issues that we think need to be resolved or the committee needs to start monitoring. And the first one would be basic education, which is Vote 14, where we're looking at the spending patterns of the school infrastructure backlog grant. And this grant in itself hasn't been performing since 2011-12. It has been recording very poor spending patterns. And in the 2017 adjustments budget, we reduced the baseline by close to half a billion because of the underspending. So even if for the current quarters, the second and the third quarter, there was some slight improvement in the grant, the Treasury projects that the grant is likely to underspend by another half a billion, because we're looking at how far they have spent up to date, and we realize that they are unlikely to spend the rest of the money in one quarter, which will be the fourth quarter. The department has indicated that the delays or the slower spending is due to poor performance of some implementing agents and difficult experience in replacing them. So they're struggling to get people who are qualified enough to perform the services. If you look at justice and protection services, the main reason there, which was what we want the committee to note, is that the underspending on correctional services and for office accommodation, this is mainly due to outstanding payments of the phase two and non-payment of invoices to DPW. But as I said before, this was a problem that the department managed to resolve, and we think going forward they won't be underspending. The one thing that we worry about would be the overspending on compensation of employees for the Defense Force. And the main reason there for the overspending is because the compensation budget do not support their personnel strength as well as the payments of overtime. So the payments of overtime is really taking most of their budget, but also they're not balancing the HRBP plans with what they have in the establishment. So as I said in the previous slide, they are the department that has the largest number of employment of employees above their target. Then you have justice and correctional services, where we want the committee to note that their underspending on the office accommodation is mainly due to non-payment of invoices, and we hope that in the fourth quarter this would have been resolved between the Department of Public Works and for justice, so that we don't see continuous underspending in vote 21. For the police, which is vote 23, the underspending on goods and services was due to delays or delayed payment to the State Information Technology Agency, as well as the service level agreement between the CETA and the department. But these ones, I think they have been signed now, and we hope that in the fourth quarter this will be resolved. There's a number of issues in urban and urban development and infrastructure, and the first one would have been for telecoms. Now, the implementation of South Africa Connect, the broadband project is delayed, and this is due to the department not finalizing the agreements with the agencies that must implement, and we expect potential underspending for the rest of the year. You have human settlement, which is vote 38, where they have shown persistent underspending, and this has been on the National Upgrading Support Program, which has also not led the outcome of scaling up informal settlement upgrading. There's been good spending by the Eastern Cape Province on the Human Settlement Development Grant. However, this may look like they're spending according to expectation, but the province still has a lot of accruals from continuing to appoint new contractors for new projects, but the existing one has not been fully paid. So they continue to acquire or to go into contract with new people, but they haven't really settled the debt of the past. So once that is settled and those contracts are fully paid, then the true spending for Eastern Cape will be visible. So we're monitoring that quite a lot, and it is one of the programs that we will be reporting back on in the fourth quarter, just to make sure the committee and knows or is aware of how they ended up spending for the rest of the year. When we're looking at the transport vote, there's a lot of concerns around oversight on public entity spending and performance of mainly three of the public entities in the transport sector, and the first one would be PRASA, which is the rail agency. I thought it was my time is over. Okay, now.
Thank you, Chair. So as I was saying, for transport, what we've noticed is that the public entities and their performance must be monitored. And the ones we're worried about, as I said, is PRASA, the Road Traffic Management Cooperation, as well as the rail safety regulations. We monitor that, and we will report back on how they have been performing for the rest of the year. But we're a bit concerned about their performance for now. We looked at energy, and we also looked at corporate governance, and their main thing would be underspending in community works program, but this is mainly due to delays in submissions, assessment of service providers service provider invoices. So I think, Chair, in general, most of the department are struggling with either accruals or the payment of their invoices or finalizing the contracts between the service providers and themselves. So in that instance, they will show a lot of underspending. But we think for the rest of the year, in the fourth quarter, if this could be finalized, we will see some of the improvements in their numbers. For administration services, I think what has been noticeable is the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, which is DECO, Vote 6. DECO is struggling, like defense, to be within the compensation ceiling for 2017-18. They have tried to look at, or they're in the process of looking at, their foreign mission, the number of people that are placed there, and the way in which they do the compensation. So we're working with DECO to try and deal with this. But currently, the spending ceiling or the compensation ceiling has been set at $3 billion, and the department is really likely to breach this. But we're hopeful that once they do the review of the foreign missions, then they might come up with ways in which they can contain the growing compensation and fall within the $3 billion. Then there was the African Union funding, which was increased, and this was it was an increase in the assessment for membership fees and the outstanding contribution for the Peace and Security Fund. So as a result, they had to pay an additional $314.8 million in 2017-18, but they managed to find it within their baseline. But we just think that if they don't monitor the compensation ceiling, even that African Union payment might be at risk. But for now, they have managed to find the $314 million within their baseline. In the National Treasury Vault, they have identified spending in the IFMS project, and they also identified spending or savings in the jobs fund, and they used this money to via and pay other functions. So those were the two categories where National Treasury found some underspending. Then you're looking at the Statistics South Africa, which is Vote 12. Although the department's new head office building was completed and the department is already there, there are still outstanding items that have not been finalized, and these have been causing some underspending in their budget, especially for capital expenditure as well as unitary fee payments. The states say when we had discussions with them, they have indicated that there will be an overspending on compensation of employees at the end of the financial year, because the department is of the view that they're going to be filling critical positions rather than reduce personnel numbers. So, but they're still aligned to their compensation ceiling, so we're not too worried about them filling up the critical vacancies. And the last sector, Chair, that we looked at, the issues there that we want the committee to note would firstly be the Department of Trade and Industry, which is Vote 34,
where there's non-compliant by companies applying for or to participate. There's a lot of outstanding site inspection reports, low volumes of claim, companies not meeting the mandatory requirements, and delays in finalizing funding agreements. And all of these are delaying the payments of incentives, so you will see some underspending in the department. And the one thing that we worry about, apart from the underspending, is that this reduces the effectiveness of incentives if the companies are not coming forth to get or to receive the incentives. You have science and technology where there are surpluses in the entities, and these have resulted in delay payment of the transfer line. So if your entities as a department have a lot of surpluses, then you don't immediately transfer all the money. So the Department of Science and Technology will show some surpluses, and that's mainly because of that. We have rural development and land reform where they've shown some slow spending in the first and in the second quarter, but there has been improvement in the third quarter. However, one still worry about the fourth quarter spending because you don't want fiscal dumping, so you just want to make sure that even if there's some improvement in the third quarter, the department spends accordingly, not to try and avoid underspending, but they channel the funds to where they're supposed to. So we will be monitoring the department in the fourth quarter. And the last one, Chair, would be tourism, where we have seen also slow spending in the first and in the second quarter, but when we looked at the quarter, there was some improvement. But as I say, we still worry about the quality of the spending in the fourth quarter because we don't encourage departments to have fiscal dumping, but they still have to ensure that they spend accordingly. So, Chair, those are the key issues that we have identified for the third quarter when we were doing the analysis, but the presentation goes on up to 48 slides, but these are detailed per vote information that we thought would be beneficiary for the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the information that you have provided, but also I like the format, you know, which I think has made our work even much easier. What I'm talking about here is, I mean, you've got your observations, and then you break your observations where you talk about your personnel, you talk about those departments, one by one, zooming into the real issues in those departments. Start giving us a lot of information. I think, am I right? I think it has been, thank you so much for simplifying our work. Now, honorable members, I'm now going to open the floor for clarity-seeking questions. Remember, they've just come to give us this information. This exercise will be followed by us calling those departments to get even more details on why the under-expenditure, why the over-expenditure, and why the under-expenditure on infrastructure development, which is where we're looking at, which is a pillar for job creation, poverty reduction, I think I'm ready for clarity-seeking questions. But where you need more information, I'm sure you can request and they can provide us that information. I know I'd like you to elaborate on the development bank, you know, because there's allocation that was, which cost you an over expenditure. There's money that was allocated to the development bank. Let's talk about it. And what maybe I have found also missing from your presentation, which is something that we asked for in the previous financial year, and we thought it would be progressive if you also did that as National Treasurer. your expenditure report of the SOEs on a quarterly basis, because we've not been doing that. And we've been waiting for at the end of the financial year, and then we make a big noise when we know that under monitoring and evaluation, we're supposed to monitor them also as National Treasury, especially the big ones. Quarterly, I promise, is going to assist them also to improve on their performance as we monitor them and give them feedback, you know, on those areas of improvement on a quarterly basis instead of waiting until the end of the financial year. And then we all sound surprised ourselves when we had this oversight role to play over the year. That one we insist on because we think that's how we're going to help them, monitor them closely. Okay, and then whilst waiting for the members, I know that one other issue that has come up is the continuation of the non-payment within 30 days, and then we attribute that to non-availability of invoices. But at your level, what have you done to make sure though that there's an improvement in this area? Because, hey, it's an old story. No, we did not pay because there were no invoices. But what is it that needs to be done so that, you know, we then don't sit with this explanation over and over again? Because this one is a clear violation of the PFMA. Very clear. Says pay within 30 days. And we're not doing it. We've not been doing it. And I know that there was then, what do you call this note? Is it an instruction note from DG to say pay within or else, you know, consequence management? Because we've not been doing it every time we talk about it, but we have not seen any consequence management. Because somewhere you've got to be very, you know, very, very strict and act. Act. And then so people can send that, put pressure on them to at least to comply. Okay. Honorable Member Manana, Honorable Member Snukwanyane, Honorable Member Kwabas, thank you very much. In that order.
Now, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. It's very informative and straightforward. But there are two points of clarity that I would like to ask. One is on slide 6. It's with regard to this part-time and contract lecturers at the TVET. What is the problem of not employing these people? I know we need to persuade this question from the Department of Higher Education. The second issue is with regards to slide 10. This is National Treasury. Delays in the IFMS project. If my memory serves me correct, there was a big noise about this project. How far are you with this matter? Last time we requested a report. We were told there were law firms that were dealing with this matter. I don't remember the name, whether the Detroit or what. Yeah, if they can just tell us how far are they.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks very much, Treasurer, for the presentation. I'd like to start by just saying that there are so many things that are just a repetition, things that have been happening over a number of years. And it would be very helpful if Treasury would say, because this and that has been happening for so long, this is what Treasury is going to do, is trying to do. I'll tell you why, because let me just make some examples. I mean, things like lack of supporting documentation is repeated, non-payment of invoices. Those things, I mean, these are things that would be said by the department, but what is Treasury saying? Because it would help us a lot if Treasury says that the department says this and this, because like when you were presenting, you were saying that this is what they say, but what is Treasury saying about it? Because it's not satisfactory as far as I can imagine. They must keep telling you the same thing, because Treasury is there to monitor and to oversee what they are doing, rather than to say they've given this excuse. And you know, the tone of the presentation is like you're happy that they say that, but I personally do not think we should actually just take it as they say. They say this is the reason, because they cannot be giving you the same reason every year, because this is exactly what they are doing here, to give you the same reason. Just to pick on a few things, under human settlements on that slide number 4, where you say there's misalignment in spending projections and grant payments, why? I would actually ask the department, why is there that misalignment? These are not new departments. It's not like we're establishing new departments. They've been in existence. They've been doing work, but they just don't do the right things. And I think that's where the monitoring and whatever action should be taken. And that thing on transport of saying, if you can just clarify that slide number 5 where you say transfers to SANRAL and the and road traffic in Britain were made earlier than scheduled. Why? And what does that mean? Because I'm not quite clear. And then my colleague here has asked that question on slide number 6, because I was also going to ask why there is a 10,358 employees below target. Why are they not being employed? What does the department say? And what does Treasury think about that? I mean, that huge number, because I imagine that there are lots of people. And this is the same as this thing of poor performance by some implementing agents and difficulties experienced in replacing them. If I were Treasurer, I wouldn't buy that, because I believe that in the infrastructure industry there are lots of people. If they say they are unable to find experienced people, I would have a serious problem. And maybe we need to probe a little bit more and find out from them why they are unable to find experienced people, because I believe that in the industry there are lots of them. I'm not going to go on and on, because I've got so many questions, but one other question is the issue of the Eastern Cape, where you see under the Human Settlements Development Grant, they have massive accruals. You did say that Treasury will be monitoring, but what has been happening, because you are saying they are having massive accruals from continuing to appoint new contracts for, that would be expected, I agree. I'm not saying that you're wrong to say that. But then what is the way forward in dealing with these accruals? Because accruals will definitely, you know, they'll hijack the whole budget of the department. They will never be able to spend properly if this is going to be happening, if they keep accumulating accruals. Maybe the issue also of the African Union funding, where there is that shortfall. Did they or did they not know beforehand? Because I would imagine that if there's an increase in fees, they would be informed on time and
and then plan for it. But maybe you can just say something about it. And then maybe lastly, I won't ask some of the things. Lastly, the issue of State South Africa filling in critical posts rather than to reduce personnel. You see, I'm worried about the rather than. And you, when you presented, you also say Treasury is not too worried. Is it rather than or while they're also reducing? Because I think the reducing is also necessary. I don't know, maybe there's a reason why they do not reduce at all, but they appoint, they fill critical posts. Thank you very much. Got lots of questions, but thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Let me share the same sentiment as Honorable Snokwanyana about repeated reasons why the underspending in some instances, things like invoices, for instance, not being presented on time. What becomes even worse is when this is department to department, where, for instance, some departments are leasing offices from Public Works, and you get the reason that departments are not paying because Public Works is not submitting the invoices. In some instances, departments behave as if they don't even know the offices they themselves are occupying, and they are waiting for Public Works to tell them, you are occupying this office. So it's a nice reason to say, well, we have not received the invoices from DPW, and of course that includes DPW not saying which offices. So it can't continue like that. The issue of invoices should be a closed chapter by now. It's long been there, and that goes, for instance, for the payment within 30 days. The issue of invoices or insufficient information not being submitted, it's an old story. It cannot continue like that. We say this to National Treasury because you receive these reports from these departments every time. And you should be able to say to these departments, but you can't go on reporting about how you are handling the finances to us and giving us the same old reasons why you are not performing. It's your responsibility to oversee what departments do with funds that come from the national fiscal. And of course, we will have to do our own part as well as Parliament. So, Just look to that issue and really deal with it. My first question, Chairperson, is on slide 4. It's repeated in another slide, the issue of DTI and companies that are not complying with all sorts of other things. Perhaps the question that should arise is, how do these companies report to DTI, and therefore DTI being able to report to yourselves as National Treasury? In other words, how do they account for the incentives they receive from government? Because non-compliance with all sorts of documentation outstanding site inspections and things like those does raise a question about the Department of Trade and Industry's oversight role on the incentives they give to these companies. And DTI, in turn, coming back to you to report on how these funds have been utilized by these companies and how these companies have reported back on that. So that has got to be cleared up. We would like to understand how how you have dealt with that situation. The development bank, the BRICS bank, I don't understand why it should be it should continue to be part of overspending, because after the special appropriations bill was passed, the first time that that money had to be paid to the bank, it should follow that that amount should now be part of the budget, and it can't be recorded as part of overspending, because it's now built into the budget, unless of course there is an increase arising possibly from from currency fluctuations and so on. If that is the explanation, that's a different story. But please explain to us why then do you call it an overspending if it is not part of the currency questions. On slide 7, yes, I think Honorable Snokwanyan has raised that issue about the spending on infrastructure, the school infrastructure question. Again, it's an issue that we have raised before about the failure of implementing agents and nothing being done about that. IDT, I think, was part of that problem at some point, that the issue that was raised by this committee, IDT's failure to implement as part of that implementing agent. We raised an issue about the involvement of the I think Kucha and Richards Bay industrial zones and so on. Of course, we got an answer that they have the capacity to implement, but what about the other agencies that are failing to implement? And then it's the same story we were asking before. The same reasons being given financial year after financial year, and there doesn't seem to be a resolution to it. And National Treasury keeps on receiving this excuse, and itself doesn't do much to impress upon the department and the agents to do their work properly. So explain to us your difficulty insofar as resolving that thing is concerned. On slide 8, defense and military veterans, please make us understand what is meant by the personnel not contributing to the strength of the department and therefore causing some overspending. Do they have personnel that is redundant? So what is that exactly? Slide 10, your jobs fund. It's an issue that we raised in, I think it was last year. It's been there for some time, underspending on the job fund. What is your challenge there? Because that is directly under yourselves. Yes, Chair, let me stop there for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
On slide 9, you indicate that for the South African Connect program, the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services has not yet finalized agreements with implementing agents. This is a major concern because this project is meant to connect clinics and schools to the internet. Can you elaborate on the challenges in this program and what do you think can be done to address these challenges? All right, my second question is, on slide 9, you raise concerns on oversight over PRASA, RTMC, and RSR. All these entities have experienced significant challenges. Could you elaborate on this and measures that you think need to be put in place to address address this or discussions you have had with the department? Now, yes, on DECO, you indicate that DECO has failed to implement its exit strategies to manage its wage bill. And you elaborate to say one out of six strategies has been implemented. What is the challenge here? Because I think that's where we would want to cut costs as soon as they implement the six strategies. I think the better in this area. All right. Of course, the outcry out there is the quality of education for our learners. Now, you talk about the underspending on the school infrastructure backlog grant, which has been a problem since its inception in 2011-12, and this continues to delay the eradication of unsafe schools as planned. What, in your view, is the key challenge in this program? Because it does, I think it does contribute towards, you know, the poor quality of education. The environment must be conducive. And also, have you seen the plan? Is the eradication of unsafe schools planned? Do you have that plan? Because as this committee would like to have it and use it as an instrument to measure performance in this area of work, the plan. Okay. Of course, on vote 31, small business development, we note that the National Informal Business Upliftment Scheme, which has underspent in previous years, continues to face challenges. In your view, what are the main bottlenecks it's called NIBAS. Is that how you pronounce it? NIBAS, yes, program. All right. We will now hand over to your good self and your team to respond to the issues raised by honorable members. Thank you very much, Doctor. You want to come?
It's possible that I just asked because I didn't hear anybody else wanting to ask something else so that they answer one.
Okay. I know that you are moving from an assumption.
Yes, I'm saying that.
So are you sure you're not going to ask other questions?
They are. They're just for some of them.
Okay, but maybe, you know what, let's allow them to respond. Let me give you another round so that you don't lock anyone out. Because in the process, as you respond, you might trigger also some new questions from the members. Then we allow a second round then. Thank you very much. Thanks for your understanding, madam. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. The questions are difficult.
Doctor, please.
We will do everything to make sure that we answer them. Chair, through your permission, can I introduce my team that will be helping you with the questions? I have Mr. Owen Wilcox, who deals with economic cluster.
Mr. Who?
Economic Services, Owen Wilcox.
Okay.
Mr. Rendari, who deals with Justice and Protection Services, and Ms. Orica, who deals with urban development and infrastructure. So they will definitely be helping me answer questions. And Chair, just one correction. So when I presented on slide 3, I basically said for the quarter there was an overspending of 6.3 billion. But the overspending of 6.3 is not linked to the bullet that followed. So the new development bank did not overspend. In when you're looking at the payment of financial assets, that category of spending, what is in there would have been the SAA settlement, it would have been the new development bank, and it would have been the recapitalization of the post office. So the new development bank in itself was budgeted for, and the budget was enough to pay for the annual membership, so they didn't overspend. So I just wanted to clarify that. Chair, on your question regarding the spending on SOCs on a quarterly basis, so what we prepared, and I'm not sure if, because Julia, who was acting at that time, was the one who circulated the information, we circulated to the committee a list of public entities that public finance is responsible for, and there were about 200 of those entities, and we requested that the committee chooses the ones that are big, the ones that are problematic, the ones that you want us to come present here. So I'm not too sure if he managed to do that, but when I get to the office, I will resend him and you the information so that when we come back here, we have the ones that the committee are looking for and we can productively discuss those. Because there's a number of them, and we wanted to make sure that we focus on the ones that the committee is interested in. So that information was circulated. But it's okay, when we finish, I can recirculate it to you, and then we can have that conversation before we can present for the fourth quarter. Thank you. So for the African Union funding, so what happens when we do the budget is that we look at the membership increases over the years, we look at the estimate of inflation and what other additions may come. So when we did the budget for 2017-18, we didn't know that the membership was going to be increased. So it was increased during the year. That's why there was the 300 million shortfall. It was because of the decision that was taken by the African Union already after we have budgeted for the membership. So we had to make adjustments to meet the new regulations for the African Union. So it was not that the department did not budget accordingly or they under-budgeted. It's that the African Union increased the membership during the year. I will ask the rest of the team to deal with the other questions in detail. I would gladly ask Deco to come explain to the committee on why they should do that. I'm sorry, Chair, just one point which is very, very difficult for us. So we do the monitoring of the department. We engage with the department. However, as the PFMA states, the DG of a department is still accountable for what happens in the department. So the way we've come with this presentation and given the highlights and the issues that we want the committee to help us with, we are here to ask that, because we try by all means, but it seems each year we face the same problem, we are basically here to ask the committee, can you call these departments and can they account? Because they know they have to account to Parliament, and it's difficult for them to account to the Treasury, because they will say, no, according to the PFMA, this is my job, and I account to Parliament, I don't account to the Treasury. So the way and the reason why we did the presentation this way and highlighted the issues that we wanted you to see is we're hopeful that if you call these departments and they come and account to you, then they will be able to give you more information and explain why they don't pay the invoices on time or why they don't finalize their contracts. So at least they know they have to account to Parliament, and we're hopeful that by doing it this way, then there will be departments that come and account.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just go over the questions that I'm able to answer. In terms of the non-payment within 30 days, there is a part of the Treasury, the Office of the Chief Procurement Office, that is trying to look at this. It's a very complicated, unfortunately, it's not an issue that departments are just are being lazy about paying it. Usually there's some conflict and some, the department and the service provider do not agree on the invoice, on the amount of the invoice. That's usually the cause of it. I think the OCPO is probably better placed than us to give you a better response on how far they are on that. On the IFMS, the delays because there is a service, an audit has been implemented on that, so all payments have been stopped, which is obviously being showing up as under expenditure. Our understanding is that the audit should be finished soon, and then we should be seeing payments going off from June. I don't know anything about an audit report. I don't know if Dr. Modisa knows about that. But maybe we can. That's something else we can come back to the committee on, or National Treasury should come and answer for that. I think quite a few of the honourable members had concerns about the DTI incentives and how they're currently working. So the process is when the DTI gets the allocation for the incentives, the companies will apply for an incentive. DTI will go through that application. They'll often say to them, you can qualify for the incentive if you increase your BEE level or increase job numbers or commit not to reduce job numbers. The incentive is only paid out once the company makes an investment. So they're usually their incentives to investment. So if companies start buying machinery to increase production, then DTI will pay 30% or 40% towards that investment. But what's been happening is because the economy's been so slow and growth hasn't really been happening, the companies aren't making that investment. Instead of increasing capacity, they've decided that they can just stay on current levels of capacity. So that's leading to major issues with non-claiming of the DTI incentives. It's clearly a big issue. We have implemented a review of the DTI incentives, or actually all business incentives throughout government. So DPME is conducting that review. It should be done by about June, and hopefully we can design a better incentive system or something that's a bit more responsive to the economy as it is currently. Just a bit more information on the development bank. So that payment was due to be made in quarter four. I think the honourable member correctly anticipated the answer here. It is budgeted for, but it was due to be made in quarter four. But when the Treasury saw what had happened to the currency, they decided to make the payment early to take advantage of a strong currency. So it appears as over expenditure in quarter three, but it was always budgeted for. There's no extra amount of a. No. No, the full amount in dollars was paid, but we got a good rand amount. In terms of status A, I think that's still a critical issue. They've indicated to us that they're going to carry on filling in posts, which means that they're going to exceed their budget, their compensation ceiling. That's not something that Treasury is happy about, and we're continuing our engagements with them. I think that's me for now. Oh, sorry, the Jobs Fund, I think it's a similar sort of story to the DTI incentives, that companies have to meet qualification criteria before the payments are made, and the companies aren't actually meeting those criteria, so that's why the payments aren't able to be made. This has been an issue for a number of years, as the committee noted. We have actually, in last year's budget process, the Jobs Fund allocation was reduced, so it's something we're looking at actively.
Thanks, Chair. Let me deal with some of the questions raised. Let me start with the one from Honorable Tawasa on defense. We are really grappling with the defense force when it comes to them staying within the compensation ceiling. The ceiling set doesn't accommodate all the members employed by the defense force, meaning that there are 27 odd billion for compensation of employees is not enough for the current members of the defense force that they have at the moment. We had a series of engagements with the defense force because part of the difficulty is that you need to be fit to be in the force. And internationally, as soon as you get to the age of 40, it's like you, they don't use the term redundant, it's like undeployable members. And we've been engaging with them to come up with an exit strategy for the undeployable forces. Within the HR, they've color-coded some of the members. Green, amber, red. Red are those ones closer to retirement, the undeployable. And over and above that, we must also note that they also have this the reserve force, the young, energetic guys, doing the work which actually was supposed to be done by the regular forces. And when we engage, I think there are also security reasons, because the numbers are so huge. Security in the sense that if they simply exit without anything else to do, they are likely to cause instability in the country. So, but we're continuing to engage, and the main thing being to come up with an exit strategy to say, if you are at the age of 40, for example, and you are no longer deployable, what do we do? Like, for instance, within the Defense Force, they've got what they call works formation. Works formation is something, I can call it a mini DPW, where they do maintenance in the bases and all those sorts of things. And that's the problem that we're sitting with in the Defense Force. By saying that their COE doesn't support their personnel strength. And over and above that, they've taken a deliberate decision that they're going to maintain their numbers at 75,500. And even that number, even the COE ceiling, it doesn't accommodate that number of 75,500. But we'll continue to engage, hence the overspending of 120 million in the third quarter. Let's move over to the issue of outstanding invoices. I understand your frustrations, Chairperson and committee members. We're also frustrated too, in the sense that most of the time we talk about public works and CETA mainly. Within the public works space, the security departments are the major clients of public works. That's why even in the presentation you will see it's mainly correctional services and justice and correctional development on the issue of invoices. But just to give a bit of a background regarding invoices. In 2006, there was a devolution framework where budgets were devolved from public works to the department. And public works was simply to bill the department. The intention was to migrate towards itemized billing, because what the framework does is that a department has been given 1 million, and that million it will be divided by four quarters, and department have to pay. But that was not the end of it. It was for public works to come up with itemized billing, and that ended. That exemption ended in 2016-17, and when it ended, public works themselves, they came to us requesting for extension, and they came late during the year in 17-18, and then we had engagements, and at the end, that exemption was extended with some plans to say public works then on a quarterly annual basis they must report, and again they've identified some of the projects departments that they will be starting with. Hence, the departments then, because the exemption ended in 2016-17, when we started 2017-18, they couldn't pay because there was not that itemized billing from departments. And now part of the problem is that departments get billed. That's what they tell us, that they get billed even for the properties that they're not occupying. That's why there is this contestation that takes forever between departments and public works. So as an accounting officer, I cannot just simply pay because they are billing me even for the department for the buildings that I'm not occupying. That's why you find this problem. Maybe the committee can also assist in that regard, CETA included. The issue of poor performance by contractors, and again, we find that with the building of courts, building of police stations, when we engage with the departments, I don't know as to whether it's the industry standard or something. It's something similar that gets done before you dismiss a person. The verbal warning, the written warning, the hearings, and all of that. Within the industry, apparently, if they realize that you're not performing, there is this Latin term that they use, they put you on mora. It's like they give you a period within which you have to show change that you will be performing. Failure to do so, now they start with this all these warnings and it goes on and on. Some of these cases, they even go to court. So that's why you find that this non-performance sometimes it takes time, leading to underspending by departments. I will end there for now.
Thank you, Chair. Where do we start? So, Honourable Manana, in relation to the part-time and contract lecturers at community colleges and TVIS, so in relation to the community colleges, a lot of these part-time lecturers are there because it's short-term programs and it's only for a few hours a week. So it doesn't make sense to have somebody contracted for the full time, but they're only working a few hours a week, or they're only working on a short-term contract because they're there for a very specific program that is a three-month or a six-month program. And in relation to the TVET colleges, the Department of Higher Education is working on so those part-time lecturers that they have inherited, because there was a function shift around all of this. They will move. So DET is working on converting those contracts into full-time contracts. We don't know, so DET hasn't given us any indication of how long it will take to convert those contracts into full-time contracts. In relation to Honorable Senakonyani's questions around the misalignment between the payments on the Human Settlements Development Grant and the Urban Settlements Development Grant, and similarly to SANRAL and the Road Traffic Infringement Agency. So what happens, so specifically in human settlements, the Division of Revenue Act has a requirement on when the national department has to pay provinces. Now, when that does not align to how the department then projects their spending to us, so by law they have to make a payment by a specific date, but in their own projections when they report to us at a national level, they don't include that in their spending plans. What you see is this misalignment. So they would say that they would project that the payment would go to provinces on the Human Settlements Development Grant, for example, in a specific month, but in their projections they show that it would probably only happen a month later. So that is exactly what happened in the Department of Transport with the transfers to SANRAL and to the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, was that so the department pays SANRAL on a quarterly basis and the fourth quarter payment was made in the third quarter. Part of that was because of the holidays, and they didn't think that anybody would be around to make the payment that they needed to make in January, so which is why they made the payment in December. And it was the same with the RTIA. In relation to the spending in the Eastern Cape, I mean, I think that this is a problem that isn't only unique in the human settlement space, but it's something that we're seeing across provinces. I mean, so Gauteng Health is the famous case around all of this, and one of the others that is emerging right now is the Department of Water and Sanitation, is that there are lots of projects running, and if there's a weakness within the project management system, provincial departments aren't able to monitor how much of the funds are committed and what they should go out and to contract on. And when they do all of that, when they fail to do all of that, what happens is that you end up over-committing and you over-contract, which creates all these accruals. But what actually creates the accruals is that these are invoices that are now coming in for work done, and the department isn't paying it. So part of that at the end of the financial year would basically hide overspending. So what you're basically seeing right now is spending in line with projections, but there's this growing commitments that they need to pay, and then if they don't pay it by the end of the financial year, it moves into these accruals, and that's because of the accounting system that we are on. Because if they do pay it, they know that it's going to be unauthorized expenditure, and then we have to deal with the financial misconduct process in the PFMA around all of that. In relation to just kind of poor performance of implementing agents and difficulties in replacing them, so one of the big issues around all of this is that when you plan a project and you have underperformance and you then cancel that contract, so it takes time to cancel the contract, but then you have to start the procurement process all over again. So you have to start that 3-month process, so then the project stalls, and when that stalls, you then see that the project then doesn't progress as planned. And then you will see this kind of lag, which is what we're seeing on capital spending. It's one of the issues that, was it Honorable Gwabaza has raised around, the chair who had raised around the school infrastructure program, is exactly that. You have to cancel the contract. It takes you 3 months to procure again, but even though at the beginning of the year your planning processes show that you were supposed to be on track, but because of this lag in the process, we see the underperformance. Then on the chair's questions on SA Connect. So, Honourable Chairperson, the last time I was at this committee was on the fourth quarter expenditure. Specifically, one of the issues that we had raised was around SA Connect and the persistent underspending around SA Connect. And subsequent to that, we've also had both the Department of Communications and Telecommunications and Postal Services here. Unfortunately, the problem hasn't been resolved. There's a big issue around procurement around for SA Connect, and the department then decided quite late in the financial year to change the model. But they can't get agreement on who takes responsibility for some of the things and where the risks lie between Broadband Infraco, CETA, and the department. And so as you know, that this was part of a long issue around how do you procure. The president a few years ago in the State of the Nation announced that Telkom was going to do it. We found that by just appointing Telkom in that way, it would have been unconstitutional, and the department has just been struggling around all of that. Remember, they went out to tender. The tender was canceled because nobody qualified. Then they thought that they're going to use their own entities, and now it's that kind of arrangement with the entities. Unfortunately, they haven't found that agreement yet, or they're not happy with the quality of some of the plans that they've gotten for them to sign the agreement. So CETA is pushing all the risks onto the department. Broadband Infraco is pushing all the risks onto the department, and then they get all the reward, and the department's not happy with that. And we're saying to the department, you have to strengthen your oversight so that you're able to manage these contracts in a better way. And because they're still bickering around all of that, we have now find ourselves in a position where they're not ready to sign, and if they can't, money can't move if they haven't signed and the work hasn't been done. In relation to the Road Traffic Management Corporation, PRASA, and the RSR, so PRASA is a very special case because everybody is aware of the governance issues of PRASA. So PRASA has a board that doesn't have a quorum. And one way to fix that is to obviously appoint a new board, which the department has done, right, or is in the process of doing. They've advertised a few weeks ago. If you get a new board in place, so the difficulty with PRASA is if you don't have a board and the board is the accounting officer, you can't get any kind of approvals on the budget, you can't get approvals to go out and to tender for certain things, which has resulted in significant underspending within PRASA, to the detriment of the service that they run in Metro Rail. So we do anticipate that within the next 3 to 6 months that there will be a new board in place at PRASA, and once they have that governance resolved around the accounting officer, or the accounting authority rather, PRASA is able to then start picking up on some of the processes around all of that. In relation to the RTMC, and the RTMC is slightly special because the RTMC's governance structure is a little different to everyone else's. where the executive authority for national public entities would usually be one minister. The executive authority is the shareholders committee, which is made up of the Minister of Transport and the MECs, the nine MECs of transport. So what's happened within the RTMC is the RTMC has taken on significant functions, additional functions, that we not sure has met the PFMA requirements around getting executive authority approval. And there's two specific issues around that. They have taken over the Bokkenhout Kloof College, which is a traffic college in Gauteng, and they have taken over the cross-border road traffic enforcement, road inspectorate from the cross-border transport agency. But these are new functions that was originally funded elsewhere. So when these functions were taken over, the funds didn't move, which is creating some kind of instability in their budget. And we are resolving that right now. So part of that is, do they have executive authority approval to take on that significant asset as the PFMA requires? And if they do have that, then how do we work the function, the funding around all of that? What makes this a little bit more complex is that the road inspectorate in the cross-border transport agency is actually funded through a permit fee in the Cross-Border Transport Act, Road Transport Act. So if you now move this, you might have to do a legislative change to get the money out of there to pay for this, and it's creating some kind of funding gap there. The Railway Safety Regulator is a slightly different problem. So the Railway Safety Regulator is scaling up, so in anticipation of the work that is the additional rail works that is happening, so the expansion in Transnet, the potential Gautrain expansions, the additional capital works that's happening with the new railway, the new rolling stock fleet at Metro Rail. What's happened is they've scaled up additional capacity in anticipation of all the stuff coming to them for that, because they have to do the kind of inspections on the capital works, ensuring that the safety standards are there, that the interface between the train and the station is aligned and safe and all of those things like that. And they have done all of that, changed the operational model again, and they've gone out there on our advice to get a legal opinion on whether they have done that in terms of Section 54 of the PFMA, which require executive authority approval. So they're not sure whether they have complied with the PFMA around this and gotten the Minister of Transport to approve this before they started it, which is also creating some kind of operating pressures within the Railway Safety Regulator's budget. Given these three issues, it raises some kind of questions around the public entity oversight capabilities within the Department of Transport and how the Department of Transport was able to see this happen without taking the necessary steps around all of this. You know, the PFMA requires quite explicitly for accounting officers or accounting authorities to report to the executive authorities on a quarterly basis, and if this had gone through the Department of Transport with nobody knowing what has happened around all of this, it raised questions about the capacity in the Department of Transport around us. And then lastly, the key challenge on the school infrastructure backlog grant. I mean, so this is an indirect grant, and we have general problems with indirect grants. So the indirect grant is really where national department does work on behalf of a municipality or a province. And in many cases, what happens at the beginning of these grants is that national departments are usually policy-making departments. They're regulators, and they oversight. They're not implementers, so they don't know how to do project management and all of that. And as a result of this, what we usually see around indirect grants is that they do worse than the direct grants when the money assists with the provinces or with municipalities. And in the case of the school's infrastructure backlog grant, that has always been historically the problem around all of this. And one way to resolve this, given that the Department of Basic Education has already committed the money, is how do we strengthen the planning within the department? How do we strengthen their oversight, their contract management? Because these weren't necessarily skills that they would have had in the department when the program was created. So that you have proper, you know, your supply chain management rules are slightly different. Your contracting rules need somebody to have an eye on this all the time, so that you're managing the contracts effectively, so that you're able to see delivery. And when you don't have that, you end up getting the underperformance, and sometimes it's quite late in the process when you realize you have to cancel the contract and start the process all over again. Thank you.
Can I come back neglected to respond to your question about small business development. So on the informal business upliftment strategy, to be honest, Chair, this is still related to the establishment of the small business Department of Small Business Development, where they, I think for quite some time they've been struggling to establish what it is exactly that they must do differently from what was happening when they were part of DTI. So they initially took on the administration of this program in-house, and it wasn't really working. And as you noted last year, there was quite a lot of expenditure on it. Our interactions with them have been that it would be more, the program would be implemented a lot better and more effectively if it was done by the entity, the Small Enterprise Development Agency, CEDA. So they're in the process of transferring that function and the funding to CEDA. So hopefully we will start seeing better outcomes from that money. But at the moment, expenditure is still being pretty slow.
Done, Doctor. Thank you for the responses. Honourable members, are there follow-up questions? You can also ask new questions. Honourable members, Nukwanyane.
Thank you very much, Chair. Actually, most of the questions that I wanted to speak to other colleagues have asked and they've been answered. Because one of the things on slide 3 is not a question. I was just going to, with regard to that very same bullet on the Standard Chartered and New Development, that, you know, above there it says overspending, but when you look at the bullet, spending, the expenditure is below. So it was just by way of commenting to say it's a correction. On slide 8, I was going to ask about the strength, the personal strength, and the CETA, and the DECO. But I just want to then ask, with regard to State South Africa, that the department's new head office building was completed and occupied. But you are saying there are still outstanding items that had not been finalized. But in the same breath, you are saying this causes underspending on capital and expenditure. Just clarity as to whether those outstanding items were with regard to the infrastructure, if the capital expenditure is not. Then the last one then that I would just want to clarify on is on slide 11, with regard to rural development and tourism, where you say the first and second quarters were underspent but increased spending. In quarter 3, on the one you say it was offset by increased spending. Is that a good thing, that they don't spend and then they offset it in the back? I know it helps, but is it a good thing? Because which is one of the reasons why I was saying, you know, we need to get what you are now saying about this. Would you want this to be a trend that people don't spend and then think that they, because it's not very different from fiscal dumping, if they're not going to spend, and then in the third quarter, spend a lot. But also just to say that, you know, there's a reason why Treasury exists. I know you said that you want the committee to help do this and that, but I think the committee needs to intervene once you have tried your best, you know, because there is a reason why Treasury exists, and Treasury has got the responsibility to deal, because we do question the departments. We do summon them to come and appear and we ask, but I think it would be appreciated if the Treasury would actually engage with them and then say to us, we've done 1, 2, 3, and, you know, we're drawing a blank rather than throwing hands in the air and all that. But I just wanted to really express that we do want to see what Treasury also is doing, because they assist us when they do their role, and then, of course, we will intervene if things are not happening. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Any other follow-up?
Yes.
Honourable Member Tobasa.
Yeah, first on DPW and the other departments, I get the impression that, you know, it's correct for the departments to say DPW, but you have billed me you are invoicing me on a property I don't occupy, and therefore I'm not going to pay you. But it raises another question about the contracts. The contracts that DPW and the occupying department signed between themselves and the management thereof. Because DPW can't just guess, I build the police. I send an invoice to the police, yet there is no contract between the two of them. And then the head of department of the police says, no, I'm not paying you because I'm not occupying the property you're saying you're invoicing me for. So something needs to be done to clean that part up. Because the other side of it could be, supposing the Department of Police simply pays because there is an invoice, it will become an over expenditure eventually instead of an under expenditure. So it raises a couple of other questions. I'm saying if National Treasury look a bit closer into that thing, it tells other things, tells other stories. As this committee, we could just as well worry about corruption and fraudulent activities that might be happening precisely around that issue. That thing, because you can't invoice someone on a property you have no contract with, and that somebody can't just pay you because you invoiced him or her when he has no contract with you. So it raises other questions. Now, on the second one, and this is the last one, the Jobs Fund, again, I hear the response which seems to say National Treasury handles this fund with the private sector. The private sector is keen to employ the youth, then you handle that between yourselves, and that's how the money got spent. You say it is something similar to the incentives that DTI gives to these companies and so on, and the exchange of information and reporting and invoices and all of that between the department. Of course, there is nothing wrong with that, if that is what is happening. If that is the activity that happens between National Treasury and the private sector and the employment of youth on this issue. I think it's about a year or two back, we raised the issue and we got an answer which says, we suggested you are also dealing directly with the SMMEs. And because you deal directly with the SMMEs as part of the job creation responsibility of the Jobs Fund, you've got to be to carefully consider the business nature of that SMME, whether it's sustainable, whether it's going to be able to repay the funds that you give to them as capital towards towards the operations of the business of that SMME and so on and so on. Which is fair enough. I mean, you can't just throw money to an SMME because somebody said I have a business and I'm doing X, Y, Z, and then you find that business is not viable, it's not sustainable, this person can't pay back, so that you can continue assisting others. Fair enough. But also you can't be overly protective of this fund such that you stifle the development of the SMMEs. Because part of your duty would be to assist that SMME to be productive, to be sustainable, to be able to pay back the money so that you can go on once they are stable, they can run on their own. You can all go on assisting the other. Now, in this answer you are giving us, we don't hear that part. It seems to me there are two different answers to the same question of why you are underspending. If you could clear that part so that we understand what exactly is. Our worry is you have a fund earmarked for creating jobs, particularly for the youth. It's underspending. It's under your watch. And we don't seem to be quite getting that thing properly running. So clarify these two different answers first, and explain to us a little more what exactly is going on, because it has been there for two or three financial years now, this kind of problem.
Presently we're saying that quality education is an issue. And I know that government wants an improvement in this area of work, because we see education as an investment in our learners or the youth that can also assist in the contribution of economic growth, but also the development of the country. Now, the key issue is lack of water and sanitation at schools. Now, to me, that also is contributing towards lack of quality education, because these kids have to go and miss classes to just go and help themselves somewhere else in the bush. I'd like to find out from you if there is a safety measure that you could recommend or that could be put in place for the inappropriate sanitation for now. But also on the business incentives that you have correctly said that they are meant to boost investment and employment. We have information that government is presently reviewing such incentives, looking at their efficiency and the contribution towards inclusive growth and job creation. Can you share with us the report on this, if you have, or once it's available, as we would like to check on the progress made or new recommendations made and use that to measure also performance in this area of work. I know in our engagement last year, early, I think it was around this time, we then agreed that monitoring an evaluation unit is key. But over the years, we have not correctly used this unit. Because, for instance, what you talk about, it's something that should have been done in the province on a quarterly basis, but, you know, it does pass the province, and the monitoring value gets done at this level. And then we also come, you know. So we then agreed that maybe the best way would be that you train those units, you working in collaboration with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. You train those units so that they do their oversight work effectively and efficiently. How far have you gone with it? It's a recommendation that was made last year around this time. Because I think, to me, that's key, that monitoring and evaluation. But also, we spoke to National Treasury and asked National Treasury to also train, I think it would be OCTP, train departments on contract management. Because from what we see, there's lack of capacity there, yeah? Which is costing government dearly. Because if people are unable to manage the contract, then the contract spills over to the next financial year. And once they, you know, the contract moves on to the next financial year, it also has got escalation costs, and costs that you would not have budgeted for, and also you would not have allocated to service those cost escalations. So can you please maybe give us progress report? We've always spoken about these things, especially between the two of us. If we speak, at least if we can get a response or some reaction of some kind, you know? Because we don't want to go to a set of saying like, Auditor General, give us your action plan. It will not be right. But like others, you know, and we understand like others, we would want to see a response to those issues that we raise between ourselves so that this a platform is used economically and in a manner that makes an impact in the works of the departments that we are overseeing. I will then here, I think I will want to, all right. Also on your cost containment guidelines, which of the entities and the departments are not complying? We will then hand over to you to respond.
No, just one thing, a homework for
them, okay, yeah. Homework?
On the incentives. We normally see the, you know, the monetary incentives because they are in the DTI's books and the budgets, etc., and so on, and you report on that as well. But we don't see the other part of incentives, the tax incentives. So can you go and, just for the record, give us again the money part of it. That's very obvious in the budget. But also give us the tax incentives in rand value so that we see what is all of these incentives that can be seen in the budget and those that can't be seen in money, in rands and cents. But they are there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Are you done?
Yeah.
I'm
fine.
Thank you, honourable members, for the penetrating questions again. On Stats South Africa, so what's happening there is that there's a dispute between Stats South Africa and the PPP, the PPP is public-private partnership. Yeah, the partner who's built the building. It's a question of whether the building has met the specifications that they were laid out. So they're not making any payments until they've resolved that dispute. So that's why it looks like there's underspending on that. And I think, Honourable Member, your observations about the spending patterns of rural development and tourism were completely on the mark. it's not a good pattern, and we will be interacting with the departments, particularly rural development, to try and change that pattern. Because obviously, once you push so much expenditure into the fourth quarter, you must worry about the quality of that expenditure. In terms of the jobs fund, I think the questions have reached a level that are beyond what I can answer. I would recommend it's been an issue for many years, so maybe it would be something where the committee could summon the jobs fund to come and give a presentation. I think that would be appropriate. And in terms of the DPME review, that is, as I said, hopefully will be done by about June. It will then get submitted to Cabinet, and then will be available to the public. It will go up on the DPME website, and obviously we're happy to share that with anybody, so we can share that with the committee, and it's no issue. And the final question on tax incentives, those are published in the budget review. I'm not sure which page it is. There is a table on tax expenditure. All tax expenditures are listed in that table, so it's everything from corporate income taxes, tax expenditure. You can get tax deductions for research and development, for qualifying infrastructure, and then there is also tax expenditures on tariffs, which are the big ones really. So they get rebates for the motor vehicle industry, rebates for clothing and textile industry. All of that is listed in the budget review.
Let me talk again on the issue of public works and the invoicing. I think you will remember that there is this PMTE, Property Management Trading Entity, which is established within public works. Without getting the billing right, it will hardly take off, that entity. So, but what's happening is that as part of the turnaround strategy for the department, PMTE is part of the package. And therefore the question is, in the meantime, what do we do since there are these challenges within public works? What we are beginning to explore, especially with the big clients' departments, is something that we're trying to negotiate with Public Works together with the cluster itself with Public Works, is to begin to negotiate certain functions that departments can do in the interim, given the resources that they have. For example, correctional services. They are saying that perhaps they can consider using inmates to do minor maintenance. Defense, they have got, like I indicated, defense works formation. They are interested in almost taking everything that public works does. But it's subject to negotiations between, because that function is a function of public works. It's just a matter of the cluster negotiating with public works, given these challenges within public finance currently.
There's one more on sanitation and water. So part of the difficulty around, and I don't want to make excuses for both the departments of water and sanitation and the departments of basic education, is so basic education has school infrastructure norms and standards, and we're all aware of that, and equal education has taken the government to court around the implementation of all of that. And so, I mean, part of this is kind of linked to the underperformance in the school's infrastructure grant, because this is exactly the grant that should be paying for the upgrading of schools around all of that. But I suppose one of the difficult things around all of this is, how do we use some of the innovations that the Water Research Commission has done around all of this, so that we can deal with immediate safety around sanitation services? So what is it that can be put in place immediately? And I mean, one of the things that we do around all of this is that we kind of connect departments to have these kind of conversations on alternative technologies to support safety and quality and dignity, specifically in sanitation. And, I mean, so I suppose one of the things that we probably need to do again is put the Department of Water and Sanitation in charge or in touch with the Department of Basic Education in thinking about what can be done quite quickly to support all of this. But, I mean, a big thing would be around all of this would be the school's infrastructure grant, the accelerated school's infrastructure delivery program to deal with that. And then linked to that, Honourable Chair, is your comment around kind of monitoring and evaluation and what do we do around strengthening all of that. I mean, so at the, both the provincial and the local government level, we have introduced the infrastructure delivery management program. So I mean, so this is the second phase of what used to be the IDA program, which is not only about training around for monitoring and evaluation, but also strengthening capacities around planning and infrastructure delivery. So one of the things that the IDMS does is also look at, and together with the Department of Public Service and Administration, in setting up standardized organizational structures around for infrastructure planning and monitoring and oversight, and we have done this successfully in the health sectors and in the basic education sectors, and we are now moving on towards transport and specifically roads, so that what we're able to do is to strengthen capabilities within departments in how they manage this, strengthen capabilities within departments in their own organizational structures to ensure that we have strengthen capacity not only around planning and monitoring, but also in contract management, and work has, it continues around all of that, and as we do systematic reviews of the program, we tweak these things to deal with to make the necessary improvements. Do you want me to deal with the cost containment? And I suppose this is so Chief, Honourable Chair, one of the things that is quite difficult for us when we come to this committee is that while we are one national treasury, I mean the division that deals with the oversight and monitoring of departments also deals with the oversight and monitoring of the national treasury, and sometimes when we come here there's an expectation because we're the national treasury we can answer questions for some of the other programs, and just like you're expecting to call a DG of a department to come and account for some of these things, it might be a good idea to call the DG of the treasury to come and account for some of the other work that the treasury is doing around all of this. So one of that would be around the cost containment stuff. I mean, just to say, on cost containment specifically, I mean, by writing that instruction note has given the Treasury some kind of authority in checking compliance from a budgeting point of view and how they budget for these things and all of that. But one of the things around all of this is also the role of the Auditor General in checking whether this isn't irregular expenditure. I mean, so on a monthly basis, what we do is we write to departments, including the National Treasury, on a report of our assessment of their monthly expenditure. So the issues that Honourable Senakonyani has raised is something that we raise on a continuous basis, and we say to departments, take remedial action. And we would say to the National Treasury, please advise on this. This is inconsistent with your plans. Please take remedial action. And that's the best that we can do around all of this. And so on programs that the capacity building unit in the Accountant General runs, that would be in our APP, stuff around cost containment and progress and on the implementation of all of those things, the jobs fund, and a range of other issues is something that we're happy to take back to our colleagues, but also for you to call the National Treasury to come and account on that, just like any other government department would.
I will try and simplify the presentation some more just to avoid the confusion I noted, and I will definitely deal with it in the next presentation. And while I said that we come to Parliament to ask for support, we have to continue to do our work, and we will try by all means to make sure that we do it to the best of our abilities, but sometimes we do need help as the Treasury, and I'm sure Honourable Member will appreciate that. When we come here, we would have tried by all means to deal with the departments, but we will continue to do our work. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Members, any comment? Are we happy? Exhausted all the questions? Okay. On your quarterly report, whereby we requested for quarterly reports on the state-owned enterprises, because you have your monitoring and evaluation unit, and you would know which are the key SOEs that would need close monitoring. I know you did throw that bet to say we must tell you which ones, but we want, just like you're doing here, you say, okay, these departments need attention and help us here, because also it's in the name of us helping each other. I'm sure you are best placed to can say, monitor your SAA, your ESCOM, BRASA, you know, from that. So if you can, I think if you can tell, you know, so that we help you also by providing close monitoring on a quarterly basis. I think that is the one. But also, if you could assist us with all those departments that have seen a budget cuts due to under expenditure. Of those departments that have experienced budget cuts due to under expenditure, would like to, or not due to under expenditure, but let's say all the departments that have experienced budget cuts, because we would like to see how they adapt their plans so that they're in line with what they, this one is just a special request. It's not like it's in line with this, you know?
All of them. All right. Maybe it's better to say Mr. Kobasa and my colleagues, can you help me? Which ones do you think we must focus on? Because I want us to look at them in preparation of the appropriation bill. Which ones? Not all of them. We can't do all of them. We really wish to. This committee works very hard, but hey, we can't do all of them.
So which ones do you think they must assist us with? Budget cuts? Underperformance?
Okay.
Thank you, Madam, for assisting. But yeah, he says okay. Let's also, yeah. But you know which ones you want us to also look at, ne? Yeah, promise you, from your analysis. Eh? What is defense?
Defense.
You see, now you're starting to help us. You see, now you're starting. Come again. Which one? Yeah. No, that's fine. But that's what we want. We don't want to be irrelevant. We want to, you know? Yeah. Okay, defense. We will look at defense. But if you've got others, you will then tell us. Please, doctor. You can just send a note to Darren's office to say these ones. If you can, because now you didn't know, just go and scrutinize and say these ones if we are to assist before the end of this administration, you know, and bring a turnaround so that we also make an impact in, you know, in our work. Thank you very much. It does look like we've come to the end of our engagement, and thank you once more, Doctor, and your delegation for coming, and thanks for simplifying our work by giving us, you know, specific areas of focus, so that there is close monitoring by our good selves. But also we do want you to take like our recommendation serious, like the one of training all the monitoring and evaluation units. That one is very important. But also to work in collaboration with in that training with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. I think that's it. Thank you so much. The meeting between ourselves has come to an end. The committee will be proceeding with just a few items, and then we're done. Bye. So as you walk out, I'll request that we take a 5 minutes smoke break. Is there anyone who's smoking here? Because I'm going to say it's not healthy for you, though. Okay, no, that's fine. It's a human rights break. Honourable members, there are minutes that were circulated. Do you have all your minutes? Right?